So the second Aliyah of Toldos is an Aliyah that probably would not have gotten so much attention with everything else going on in Toldos. And that is a part of the special privilege that we have with our project of focusing on one Aliyah at a time. But I'll just mention as kind of a hakdama, and actually we'll lead into this Aliyah, the opening statement that we find in the parasha, to go back to Rishon for a second. So the parasha tells us that this is the descendants of Yitzchak, who was the descendant of Avram. So the pasuk begins, Ela told us Yitzchak ben Avram, Avram holiness Yitzchak. So there is much discussion as to why the Torah has to tell us that Avram holiness Yitzchak. But there is an observation that some of the later Svarim have, which is particularly relevant to our study of the theme of Chesed, and the idea that Abraham represents the Midah of Chesed, while tradition has it that Yitzchak represents a different Midah, a Midah of Din, a Midah of Gvura, and some of the Svarim explain that we're meant to understand that there's a relationship between the two. And that even though we may think that the Midas HaDin is the opposite of the Midas HaChesed, the truth is they're all connected. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world with Chesed. He created the world to benefit humanity. And to that extent, so we are the recipients of his Chesed. But a part of that Chesed is that not only should we receive his kindness, but that we shouldn't have what's called the nama de kisufa. We shouldn't eat the bread of embarrassment, meaning it shouldn't just be a free deal, that we should benefit from his kindness without deserving it. So a part of the Kodesh Baruch Hu's chesed is that he created us to benefit from him, but he also created a system where we can earn it, so to speak, and where we can deserve it, and that it shouldn't be for free. So the idea of the Midas HaDin is really an extension of the Midas HaChesed, that a part of the Kodesh Baruch Hu's chesed is that he also gives us the system of Din, that we should be able to have an even greater level of benefit from the Midas HaChesed. So therefore, the Torah tells us that Avram holiness Yitzchak, to understand that even the Midas HaDin is itself a product of the Midas HaChesed. So with that, it's also continuing this theme to note that the second Aliyah is one of the very few stories that we have in the Torah about Yitzchak. The Torah has so much about Avram Avinu. We have three parshios about Avram, and we have so much about Yaakov. And Yitzchak's story, as far as what is transmitted to us in the Torah, is very sparse. So the point might be, or Soloveitchik suggested in one of his drushos, also flowing from this idea that Avram represented Chesed and Yitzchak is about Gevura, that Avram's chesed means that he was outgoing, that he was involved with people, that his story is shared with the world, while Yitzchak, being a figure of gvura, is a figure of tzimtzum, is a figure of restraint, and therefore we don't know so much about him. We don't get to see so much of his story. More of it is concealed, and really what we see in this parsha is the extent of our exposure, or much of the extent of our exposure to Yitzchak. So here we have a story the Torah tells us that he settles in Gerar. Vayeshev Yitzchak beGerar, and there, as Naim LaTorah points out, the Litzkarav notes that anywhere he's going to settle, he's going to be among strangers. So it's dangerous to be among strangers. So he figures, okay, at least he'll go to the place where the king was, and that should give him some protection from the bris. The Netziv and the Alshech, they understand that his safety was really, the confidence in his safety was because of the promise from HaKadosh Baruch Hu to protect him. So he finds himself in a situation comparable to that which his father had gone through. V'yishalu anshi hamako v'ishto v'yomer achosi ki ari lomar ishti peni harguri anshi hamako marivka ki tovas marehi. So here the people asked about his wife, And he said, she is my sister. Ki arev omar ishti, because he was afraid to say that she is my wife. Pen yaharguni anshi hamakom arivka. Maybe they'll kill me because of Rivka, because she is beautiful. So here there seems to be something that's missing from the sentence that Ibn Ezra and others point out, that it doesn't seem to read with such a perfect flow. Because vayomer achosihi, he said that she is my sister. So ki arev omar ishti, he was afraid to say that she's my wife. Pen yaharguni anshi hamakom, maybe they'll kill me. So it's talking still as if he's speaking, he's talking in the first person, but he didn't say all this. Presumably he just said that he told them she is my sister. And the reason he said that is because he was afraid to say that she is my wife. And Penya Harguni, this idea that he's afraid they will kill me, so you would think there would need to be another word here saying that he is the one saying this. So the commentaries note on that, Ibn Ezra and others, it's implied that he said this. The Mariel Diskin suggests that this was a part of his desire to avoid outright sheker. You sometimes find that even though he was justified to try to protect his life, to say something not true, but he wanted to be careful not to say something that was totally false. So maybe he said it this way, kind of jokingly. Like if people would ask him, who is this beautiful woman? So he'd say, well, she's my sister. Listen, if she was my wife, I certainly wouldn't tell you that because you'd probably kill me over her. So I guess I might as well say she's my sister. So what he was actually saying then was literally true, but it came across as a joke. It came across as some kind of a less than serious statement, and that way maybe he avoided saying something that was outright sheker. In the Meshech Chachma, he has a much more of a halachic interpretation of what's going on here. And he notes that the din is in Ibn Ezra and Siman Yates that if somebody is muhsak, if somebody becomes established as a sister of somebody else, so then that creates that halachic reality. So as far as arayas are concerned, there's going to be a problem. It's going to be treated in the realm of arayas as if she actually is his sister. So that's going to be a halachic problem. So this is something that the Chukavis Ramah discusses in Siman Beis. So the Meshech Chachma suggests that yes, it's true that if there is a chazaka that somebody is your sibling, because that's the way people assume, so that does create a problem. But the solution to that problem is if there is an amasla, if there is some kind of a excuse that people can understand why it would be that chazaka would arise, even though it's not actually true. So that can contradict that chazaka. So the Ramah writes that an amasla would work, that if there is some kind of understandable excuse, the Meshech Chachma assumes that it's got to be a very evident excuse, something that is very compelling. So he understands that that's what the pasuk is conveying to us, that this is an example of a very compelling amasla, that because he's afraid that he's going to get killed, so then we understand that he's going to talk this way, and we shouldn't take that as a chazaka that she's actually his sister. So what the Torah is conveying is it didn't have to even really be spelled out, it didn't have to be expressed. The fact that this is such an understandable explanation, so that's enough to establish that she's not actually his sister, and we don't have to worry about any chazaka that is created by that. Okay, so the next pasuk tells us, "Vayhi ki archu on shom hayomim v'yashkech v'mimelech melech plishtim v'arach halom v'yar v'nei Yitzchak mitzachek yisriv ki ishto." So after he'd been there for a while, ki archu on shom hayomim, so the time came that Avimelech was, the Avimelech, the king of the Plishtim, was looking, he was trying to see things, and the Netziv comments, you know, the idea of Vayashkev, normally Chazal tell us, kol hashkafa l'ra, all of these surveyings convey something bad, forebode something problematic,
And indeed, he says that was what was going on, that Abimelech really didn't want Yitzchak there, so he was looking for an excuse. He was looking to find something about him. So indeed, he was looking with kind of negative intent, so that's what Vayashkef is meant to convey. But still, it's surprising. Okay, so he was looking in order to try to find something problematic, but how could it be that it was visible? As all the commentaries ask, was Yitzchak was involved with his wife. It says, Mitzachek Yisrivka Ishto, he was involved with her in a way that was not consistent with the brother and sister, and that it was clear that they were husband and wife. So how could that be done in the eyesight, in the line of vision of Abimelech? So some suggest that it's because, if you look at Onkelos, it sounds like there was a crack in the wall. So it wasn't that there was really an open window per se that he could have been aware of, but there was a crack that allowed Abimelech to see through that he didn't realize he was in front of. It's also possible, Siv points out, that the idea of Hashkafa also means from above, so that maybe Avimelech was looking from some kind of a secret vantage point high up that Yitzchak also wouldn't have been expected to understand, be expected to be aware of. The Zohar has a comment that he was using some kind of sorcery to be able to see. And the Elyalopian and the Lev Elio has a whole sicha about the nature of Avimelech and his process of growth, which we see later. He comes to realize the special bracha and the special hashgacha that Yitzchak has. So Eli Lapian goes through different aspects of the nature of Abimelech, and here at this point he notes that just like people who are very holy, so they are able to access things that others can't, they have a insight and they sometimes have visions that others wouldn't necessarily have. It's true in the other direction also, that somebody who cleaves to Tuma, somebody who is very far from holiness, sometimes also is exposed to things that others wouldn't necessarily be exposed to through supernatural means. And he was able to see, he was able to have a view into what was going on. To the extent that there was any kind of lack of vigilance on the part of Yitzchak here, so there's a comment that is instructive perhaps for where we're at right now, that the Abarbanel notes that the idea of Archulo Shav HaYamim, that it got long, they were there for a long time, so that leads people to drop their guard, that when it's easier to be careful for a shorter period of time, but when things schlep on a little bit, so sometimes people are a little bit less careful, a little bit less vigilant. And of course that's what we're dealing with over these months, with the whole COVID fatigue and how difficult it's been for people to continue to be as vigilant over the course of many months. So that's this idea of Ki Archu Lo Sham. So time schleps on, it gets harder to be careful, it gets harder to keep up the same vigilance. So now Abimelech calls out to Yitzchak, even though before the previous pasuk had said Vayishalu Anshe Hamakom L'Ishto, that the people of the place, the people around him, had asked about his wife. So at that point it wasn't Abimelech himself who asked, and Brisker Rav in his comments points to the fact that the Gemara Maseches Makos talks about this, that the Gemara Maseches Makos has a fascinating discussion about these psukim, about this whole episode. It's very relevant. The Gemara there talks about the status of an Omer Mutter, that if there's somebody who does an Avera, but he does so because he tells himself that it's Mutter, he thinks for whatever reason that what he's doing is permitted. So the Gemara talks about, is that considered to be a shogeg? Is that considered to be, it's not your fault because you didn't know, so you thought it was mutter, so you're a shogeg? Or do we say, no, that an omer mutter is considered to be sinning intentionally? So how could he be sinning intentionally if he thinks it's permissible? So then he doesn't know that it's us. So the Gemara explains that maybe we should say that Hayalalumot, that if a person could have learned, if a person had the ability to be more careful and to figure out what the truth was, then he would know that it's not mutter. So it's not always an excuse. Ignorance sometimes is an excuse and sometimes it isn't. It depends. If it was really hidden from you and you thought something was mutter, so that's the shogeg. But a situation where you could have known, so that's a situation where maybe we should call that a mazid. And the Gemara also gets into the discussion of, is there a different standard for a ben Noach than for a Yisrael as far as this whole question of Omer Mutter and whether an Avera is called a Shogeg or a Mazid. So the Gemara suggests that there was a whole back and forth here that Avi Melech could say that, well, what do you want from us? If anything had happened wrong, so can't blame us. You told us that she's your sister, so we would have been Omer Mutter. So the response to that is, the Gemara says, is they learned from you. Because if you go back to the episode with Avram, so Avram was asked directly, and he figures, I have to represent Sarah in that case as my sister. Because what kind of a person, or you have a guest who comes to a new place, what kind of a person asks, tell me about your wife? They ask, okay, are you hungry? Are you thirsty? What do you need? How can I take care of you? So the fact that they're asking about his wife, that gets your guard up. That makes you suspicious, and that's what requires taking evasive action for the purpose of protection. So if that's the case, so don't say that you're innocent here. Don't say that you're an Omer Mutter. It's the whole dialogue that makes me have to misrepresent the situation to you, so it's your fault. So Abimelech learned from that previous episode, so he didn't ask directly. So that's why the previous pasuk says, Vayishalu Anshei HaMakom, that's what the Brisker Rav points to, that they were the ones asking, it wasn't Abimelech himself. But now, so Abimelech confronts Yitzchak, Vayikra Abimelech Yitzchak, Vayomer Achinei Yishtachahi, Vayich Amarta Achosihi. So Abimelech confronts him and he says, so here she's your wife, so how could you say that she is your sister? And Yitzchak says, because I was afraid that I was going to die because of her. I was afraid that it was going to put my life at risk. So here, why did Abimelech understand this if Avram did this also? So first of all, it's a discussion if this is really the same Abimelech as with Avram. So Abimelech, like Paro, is a name that's associated with the kings, and one generation passes it to the next. So not every Paro is the same, and not every Abimelech is the same. Some of the Rishonim discussed that, and of course we just mentioned them. And we go, the Gemara seems so he's not already familiar with the whole of how these things go. Reb Chaim Kanievsky, in the time of the Kara, so he suggests that maybe he thought it was different, that in the case of Avram, so Avram also had this angle that he was able to say that Sarah was his sister because she really was related to him. So on some level, she was like a sister. So maybe that's why Avram said it. But Yitzchak, what's your excuse? Now, the truth is, Yitzchak could also say that. He also had the relationship that he could have claimed that she is on some level actually his sister. But the reason he didn't say that, Reb Chaim writes, is because that's not really the reason. It's not just because there is some kind of truth to it that justifies saying it. It's because it's a pikuach nefesh. He thought that he was going to die, so you're allowed to lie. You shouldn't pikuach nefesh. And you shouldn't think that it's only because there's some truth to it. That's what justified it. And therefore, he didn't invoke that as a response. So, Vayomer Abimelech Mazos Sisolon Kemach Shachav Achad Ha'am Es Ishtacha Vehebeis Aleinu Hashem. So here, Abimelech is saying, "What have you done to us? That one of us could have ended up with her, and that would have brought the terrible guilt upon us." And some of the Mefarshim point out that here, you see, he's talking in the plural, because unlike in Mitzrayim, where the people were all inclined towards us, and it was only Paro talking individually that he was saying that, okay, I would have been careful had I known, so you could have brought me into trouble. But here he's talking in the plural. He's saying that all of us could have gotten in trouble because there was, in general, a higher level of morality among this population. So all the people would have been mocked had they known that she was actually your wife. And the fact that you misrepresented this could have gotten us all in trouble. So by Yisav v'Melech has called Ha'am le'mor Hanogeya v'Ish Hazeh v'Ishto Mos Yumas. So Abimelech commanded everyone to say that anyone who touches this man and his wife will be punished, will be put to death. And here, as Mefarshim point out, it's in two different senses, that Negeya Bishazad means to try to harm him or to do anything bad to him. And Bishto, it's referring to try to take her for moral purposes, two different meanings of the same word being applied to both of them, but it's the same idea, leave them alone, they're under our protection, and don't do anything to them. So the last pasuk is very significant. The pasuk tells us, Vayizra Yitzchak Ba'aretz Ahi, Vayimtza B'Shana Hi Me'er Sharim, Vayivarcheliu Hashem. So here's where Me'er Sharim comes from. In case you were wondering, the famous Me'er Sharim, so it was founded by Yitzchak. And there's a lot to understand about this pasuk. So Yitzchak apparently gets involved in farming, he gets involved in developing the land. And the Tosefta, in the seventh parak of Brachos, the Tosefta writes that later on we're going to find a bracha that's expressed towards Yitzchak. And that bracha says, in the language of the Pasuk, it's Pasuk. But later on, the Pasuk says, God says, I will bless you. And she will have many children, and Rebesia Sarafa. So the Tosefta understands that this bracha, he assumes, requires some effort on his part. So therefore, he has to start doing the farming in order to merit this bracha. And the Torah Tamima has a comment that maybe he's assuming that is a Xer Shava, so to speak, or some kind of a hekesh. But if he's saying, I'm going to give you many children, so in order for that bracha to come about, he still has to be osek in peruvu, he still has to put in his effort. So too, the bracha about general prosperity is also going to require him to actually do something. So he gets to work with the farming. The Aznayim Latorah suggests that there is also an idea here that maybe he wanted to show his children that this farm work was safe in Gullis, so that people shouldn't think that he was, whatever bracha he was getting, that he was living off the cheshbon of other people. So he wanted his children to understand that this was something he was earning through his labor, through his personal effort, and that should be a part of the message, and that also helps to keep them safe in Gullis. There shouldn't be this impression that he was somehow benefiting without putting in the effort and getting this benefit through others. Now, the Slonim Rabbi, the Nesiv Shalom, notes that here we find that the Torah is explaining to us how Yitzchak's bracha gets materialized in the context of Avram. We don't find that spelled out, and he suggests that that's also similar to how we started, that regarding Avram, his midah was ahava, so it's not so hard to understand where the bracha comes from. But when someone's core midah is yira, so that's harder, that takes more effort, and therefore the Torah spells that out. The idea of Me'er Sha'arim, so that's an interesting notion. Again, it's become a famous phrase that we're all familiar with. So here, Sha'arim, people might assume that it means the 100 gates, but really it means something more along the line of 100 portions, or as Rav Shem Shem Rafal Hirsch translates it, as markets, as we sometimes find Chazal. The word Shar refers to the market, and he was able to be profitable to the extent of 100 markets. That was a tremendously profitable yield. But we also find, to his great credit, that he was involved in this planting, and he gave from it to tzedakah. He gave from it to maestros. And in fact, what great credit is that the Targum Yonason has the lashon in this translating this pasuk by Israel Litzikasa, that not only did he have wealth and he gave from that wealth to tzedakah, but he actually created the wealth for the purpose of tzedakah, that he did this planting so that he would have what to give, which itself is a tremendous madrega. It's one thing when somebody receives, and he receives bracha from a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and he wants to give from it from tzedakah, but to actively seek that you're going to be a bal tzedakah, so you'll make money for that purpose. So that's a tremendous madrega, a tremendous instruction that the Targum Yonason is conveying to us. That's what part of what Yitzchak did. So as far as an instruction, so the Rambam in Hilchos Malachim, in the beginning of Parak Tes in Hilchos Malachim, so the Rambam talks about how various mitzvos came to be even before Matan Torah, how there were mitzvos already from Shavu Mitzvos by Noach, already from Adam and Noach, and then what Avram and Yitzchak and what they added, and Shacharis and Milcha, and then the whole thing. So in conjunction with this pasuk over here, so the Rambam understands that Yitzchak added the concept of maestros. So that the Ravid critiques him, and the Ravid asks not that Yitzchak wasn't giving maestros, but that we find already that Avram seemed to have started this. So it wasn't Yitzchak who started this, wasn't it Avram who started this? And we find this in Parshas Lech Lecha, that with Malki Tzedek. So the Torah tells us that Parshas Lech Lecha, the end of Revi, Baruch El Elyon Asher, Migein Sarecha, Biadacha, Biyitei Lo, Maisim Mikol. So Avram already gave Maisim, so why is the Rambam saying that it was Yitzchak who first started Maestros? So the Kesef Mishnah understands that what was going on with Malki Tzedek, so that wasn't Maestros necessarily, that was him honoring him to involve him in some of the bounty that came from the war. So that's perhaps a different thing. The Radbaz has a comment over here that it gets to the question of whether Maestro applies specifically to Tvua, as we find here, or whether Maaser applies to other things as well. It's the whole discussion of the halacha, the practice that many have today, the very laudable practice of Maaser Ksafim, of giving a tenth of their money to tzedakah. So it's the whole question where that practice comes from. It's definitely a very, very praiseworthy and appropriate practice, but is that a din min ha-Torah, or is that probably not midrabanan? It might be more of a minig, and we say minig, we mean not even like a minig Israel, but a personal hanhaga that a person can take on to contribute to tzedakah in this way. So how would it be daraisa? It would be daraisa, as the Tosfos and Tainus suggest, is if it's somehow included in the maaser ani that we have in the context of tvua, that the Torah tells us you have to separate a tenth to give to aniyim. So do we assume that that also extends to not just the tefuah and Eretz Yisrael, but to all of the wealth and prosperity that anyone has in anywhere else, and that that also includes a obligation of maaser? So that would be the tzad to say that it connects to that. So perhaps that's what's going on here between the Rambam and the Ravid. Should we assume that it's only Yitzchak's situation which really has a connection to Maaser, or would Avram's situation also be connected to Maaser? The idea that there is Maaser involved here, the Meshech Chachma points out in the Pasuk in the next Aliyah, we can dip in for a second, that in Pasuk Yidalit, so it says, Vayhilo Miknei Tzon and Miknei Vakar, Yavuda Rabba, Vayikanu Oso Plishtim. So this idea that he had both Son and Bakar, so the Meshech Chachma explains, it's an extension of this notion that if he's giving Maaser, so it's like giving Maaser Behema also, so he has both Son and Bakar so that he can take Maaser from each, that that's all a part of this riches that he was accruing, all within the mindset of being able to give, maisa. So here, as a consequence of this, says Vayivarcheyu Hashem, that he is blessed through this process. And the Psikta comments that even though we normally say that bracha doesn't apply to that which is counted, the Gemara says in Tainus that if you want to have bracha, you have to preserve a little bit of mystery. You shouldn't keep track too closely in order to provide room for bracha. And a bracha shayr al davar hasam bi mina ayin has to be concealed somehow. But here, Yitzchak was keeping track, as the Psikta understands, in order to be able to do this mitzvah of giving meiser, in order to be able to figure out how much tzedakah he can give. So that's itself a source of bracha. The Novi Minsk Rebbe, Zichrono Lebracha, passed away a few months ago as part of this terrible COVID situation. So he points out, he points here to a comment of the Kedushas Levi, Reb Levi Yitzchak of Berdichev, in his commentary to Parshas Re'eh. So he notes there, the Pasuk says, Aser Taser, it's called Tvosecha, that you should take Meiser from all of your Tvua. So he understands it to mean that when somebody gives Meiser, the notion is that up in Shemayim, so all of his earnings are considered to be a part of the mitzvah, because due to the fact that he had all of this prosperity, he was able to take a tenth of that and give it to tzedakah. So the whole package completely is all considered to be a part of that mitzvah that was what enabled it to happen. So therefore, he is zochet even more, so that he should be able to continue giving and to do even more than that. So the pasuk, which seems to suggest that all of your tvua is a part of the meiser, the Kedushas Levi explains that it means that the next year you'll have so much more that what you'll be giving next year is equal to all of your earnings, and a tenth of what it's going to be next year is going to be equal to everything that you have this year. So that's a tremendous bracha in the spirit of what the Gemara in Taina says, Aser b'shvil shetis asher, that the person who engages in the mitzvah of tzedakah, some understand talking specifically about maestros, others understand it as a reference to tzedakah as a whole, but the person who is involved in the mitzvah of tzedakah, the Gemara says this is the one case where one is allowed to test the Ribono Shel Olam, that will have a haftacha that he will become more wealthy because of that, and that's the idea. It all becomes mitzuruf to the mitzvah, and therefore he has even more the next year in order to be able to do even more towards that mitzvah. And I mentioned the other day about the beautiful Hakdama of Rav Shimon Shkup to the Shari Osher, and he writes along very similar lines in that Hakdama that the idea of our whole involvement in this world is so that we should be able to help others, and that we're supposed to identify ourselves with the needs of everyone else, and when we progress and when we are able to succeed, we're able to then take that success and help others as well. And he makes the comparison there, the whole idea of somebody giving tzedakah and therefore becoming wealthier. It's because if you view your resources as a tool to help others and as a tool to fulfill this mitzvah. So it's, you can imagine, let's say there is a mishulach, somebody who is sent to collect tzedakah, and the understanding is that he gets to keep as his salary a certain percentage. So here, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us this great arrangement. He said, okay, here you'll have resources in this world, and really it's all there as a means to an end that you should be able to give tzedakah. And if you do that, you can keep a salary, you can keep 90%. So if you do an even better job, so then you'll be given more and more responsibility, you'll be given more and more to give out, then you'll still be able to keep 90%. Imagine what a great deal that is. Imagine what a great arrangement is. So that's how the Shari Yosher understands this idea, and it's very much consistent with what the Kedushas Levi is commenting on the Pasuk in Re'eh, and what the Novi Minsk is saying. This is the suggestion here as well, that because he introduced this whole idea of Maestros and of Tzedakah, so he was zocheh to
a many-fold bracha to the Mei Yesharim, and that's a part of what is available to one who recognizes the tremendous promise involved in Staka. We have a tremendous schus this morning to be joined by Rabbeinu Rabbi Kohn Shlita, who's going to share a few words with us now.